Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Rock and Roll Rhetoric, and it is about loving songs from folks we would never actually take advice from in the real world. Our guest for this episode, who is someone who knows a little something about music, his name is Christopher Carasani, formerly known as Dr. Z. Small time, big time, whatever time promoter. Very small time promoter in Pittsburgh. He's someone who's passionate about music like I am. However, while I love really innovative, interesting, creative music, Mr. Carasani likes things that are catastrophically bad.
We like a lot of the same music.
Well, what do we like that's the same?
We like Marah.
Marah, that's one band.
I think that's about it.
Tim Barry.
Oh, we both like Tim Barry, who I turned you on to.
Yes.
And we both like... Okay, that's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. But and you like stuff. So, yeah, so I guess...
What are your thoughts on Billy Joel?
Catastrophically awful. I mean, it was a thing for a time and a place and a people. And I was one of those people. He was a
exactly.
Long Island boy. I was a New Jersey boy. But that time and place are over.
But the music's still good.
No, it's not. It's awful, overproduced 80s thing.
Most of the stuff I like of his was from the 70s, which was not overproduced except for the strings.
Yeah, well, there you go.
We could do a whole podcast about the strings from the 70s. Where did that come from?
You know what I mean? Blame Sir George Martin. It worked for Let It Be.
Oh, actually, George Martin didn't do Let It Be. It was Phil Spector.
Oh, well, then you go blame Phil Spector then.
We could blame him for a lot of things. A couple deaths.
That bad Ramones record.
Oh, he ruined that.
Yes,
that's funny you say that. I didn't know we knew the same Ramones stuff.
Well, I mean, there's not a whole lot of noteworthy Ramones stuff anyway. You know, they were one of those bands that, you know, played 25 songs for 25 years. And
interesting.
You know what I mean? That's what that is.
We've never talked about the Ramones. I've known you for years.
Yeah, you know, it's 25 songs for 25 years, and then they died. They all died except for the original drummer.
I think they should. I think, you know, that might have been a good thing for them. Because God knows what they'd be putting out now.
Well, you know, I don't think they'd be putting out a whole lot, but they would still probably be playing those 25 songs.
In like 17 minutes.
In 17 minutes.
Now, I never saw the Ramones. I know this is off topic, but did you ever see the Ramones?
No, I never saw the Ramones.
My good friend Steve saw them like 7 times, and they would do the songs in double time.
Mm.
So they would do like 20 songs in 17 minutes and be off. And that's the whole show.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, if you've seen the Ramones documentary, End of the Century.
I turned it off.
I loved it. There was the song when they got the one replacement drummer who's like a lawyer in New York City now. And they were saying how he overheard Marky Ramone saying that he really liked this new drummer because they shaved 90 seconds off the set list.
I believe that.
You know, that they managed to do that.
I understand the aesthetic, but as someone who would be paying $20, $30, $40 to see them, I would feel I was getting gypped.
Well, you know what, though? I think there's also something to be said for if something aesthetically is really limited. How much of it can you take? You know, it's sort of like, seeing when I saw the Handsome Furs a couple summers ago, it was Brett, the maestro of the theme music, who pointed out that, yeah, you know, they played for about 30 minutes, but all of the songs are do-do-do-do, you know, do-do-do-do, you know, it's the same fucking thing, and so how long can you take that? I mean, that's what I call opening band syndrome.
Okay.
Some headliners have opening band syndrome. Opening band syndrome for me is first song, oh, well, that's kind of interesting.
Hmm.
Second song sounds kind of like the first. Third song sounds like the first two, and you're wondering, it's a half-hour set probably, right?
And
you're hoping that, and they hope they clear their shit off
and
the stage.
And I always go see the opening bands since I missed oh my gosh, who was it? I missed Little Steven and Disciples of Soul in 1987 when they opened for U2. And that was their only tour. And
ever.
I have all of their records, and I love them. And I missed it because I was in the parking lot eating freaking bad hot dogs and drinking warm beer.
Yeah, well, that'll do it.
At Three River Stadium.
Yeah, well, there you go.
A highlight of that show, by the way, is when someone vomited and it froze and someone slipped on the frozen vomit. But that's a whole other story.
That's a pretty good story. So, I mean, part of our aesthetic thing, so you like stuff that's horribly overproduced, but also you're a lyrics guy.
So that's funny because most people think I don't like stuff overproduced, but compared to your taste, I like stuff that's overproduced.
Yes, horrifically overproduced, yes. Yeah. And you like lyrics.
I'm all about lyrics. You could have the worst song in the world, but if the lyrics make my toes curl or make me think about something else, I'm hooked. Yes, that's completely true.
Okay, which is that brings us to our main topic, which
yes.
is the way in which lyrics, the way in which, you know, if I can get my Henry Giroux hat on for a second, you know, maybe popular music is a kind of popular pedagogy. Maybe it's kind of a popular teaching, or at least a way to get an idea across and reach a large number of people.
If this was a video podcast, people could see me nodding my head.
Yes, yes, but it's only me. But thank you for narrating the fact that you...
Go on. So you were saying...
Well, you know, that's kind of my point, is that, you know, that... And I will admit, I was once a lyrics guy. I went through a lyrics phase, and then I got... And it had to be about the music, but... That
you may be the only English professor in the whole world that doesn't care about lyrics.
I read books. If I want words, there's these bound sheets of paper together. They also happen to be useful for starting fires. But there's these bound sheets of paper with words in them. And like a lot of fucking words in them.
And they're pretty interesting words.
And they're
course.
Usually pretty interesting words. Which then frees up the music. It's sort of like how when photography came around, portraiture as a painting art form kind of died out.
Okay.
You can't have Impressionism or Abstract Expressionism or Jackson Pollock without the Kodak Brownie camera. Because once artists, painters were like, well, if you want to take a picture of someone, have a picture of someone, I don't know, just take a fucking picture. Well, let's see what else we can do with paint. You see, that was where I got to with music, where that when I started getting into books,
wow.
I said... Well, all right, let's see what we can now do with guitars. Words are great, but I'll save those for print and the internet.
People must be astounded that we're friends.
You know, they must be.
Because that's all I care about in a song, is I want, if I don't have, first of all, I like songs that have a narrative, that have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm. That have a story. If you're not going to tell me a story, which are my favorite kinds, I want to hear some interesting shit that's like, wow, I never thought about that. And there are many, many songs that musically are disinteresting to me that if they turn a phrase, they give me a good metaphor, that's all I need.
You're easily satisfied.
I don't think that's easy because it has to be really good. There are many songs that do good stuff with guitars, that sound good, that do nothing for me. So that's not easy, as you would say.
Well, you're just a little screwed up, okay?
Well,
let's not go there.
It's tempting for me to say you're very screwed up, but I wouldn't say that because you're my friend. Okay. But you're really screwed up on this, because lyrics... Are all that the song is about. Songs that tell you a story that take you some other place. You know, the greatest thing in the world is sex. Okay. Because when you're having sex, you don't know where you are, time stops, and you're somewhere else. And it takes you somewhere else. The second greatest thing is a great song that will remove you from your own body and take you somewhere else. The third greatest thing, by the way, is great hockey. when you're watching hockey, you don't know where you are.
Okay.
And the fourth greatest thing is drugs, which I don't do, so I have to stick with the first three.
Okay. And so Beethoven needed lyrics.
Go on.
Bach needed lyrics.
Those people do nothing for me. I appreciate them.
They're great composers. They're great musicians.
I have no...
They have music. They make sounds that transform people and give them that sense of motion and time and space.
They don't
need words. They do it with notes and instruments.
I can't argue with that. It just doesn't do it for me. What I need a story. I need a place. I need to think about stuff. I was at the gym the other day, and that guy Bruno Mars.
That thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that guy. He was making me listen, and I forgot I was at the gym. And I'm not a fan of that kind of music at all. And I hate probably everything that everything I know that is current, I don't like. But that guy kind of made me go somewhere else. And that's what I get out of music.
Okay. Now, when it comes to going somewhere else, though...
Is this even what we...
No, we're getting there. I'm transitioning. I'm trying to keep this
trend. Those of you out on the internet, this is not what the podcast was supposed to be about. But I'm digging it.
Yes. This is a good conversation. So, okay, when you...
I hope more than you and I agree with that, because this is what we were supposed to talk about.
Hey, listen, these people are getting this thing for free. Yeah. Fuck them.
By the way, here's my favorite part of the podcast.
Ooh.
Matt only gives me canned beer, for crying out loud.
Well, you didn't want the Hefeweizen that's in the bottle, so screw you. Screw you and the people who downloaded
it. This is Stoney's, my sophomore year roommate, Bill Krauser. If he ever hears this, I'm drinking a Stoney's. That guy would bring all the Stonies just because he knew I wouldn't drink it. My roommate would buy a beer. It's like when my dad bought maple ice cream because he knew I wouldn't eat it.
But he's still drinking the Stonies. So.
And my dad still has maple ice cream in the goddamn freezer. But anyhow. Seriously, it's like, Dad, I haven't lived there for 20 years. You can buy ice cream you like. But that's a whole other story.
Oh, boy.
Bill Krauser, who's now a great, renowned veterinarian, I'll bet if he went to his house, he has Stonies just because I wouldn't drink it. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Bill since 1991. But I hope you hear this, Bill, because I'm going to send it to you.
Yes.
Go on, Matt. I'm sorry. Okay, what were you talking
about? So you talk about, okay, going places... Well, okay, let's talk about where you go with these lyrics.
I go to wherever the lyricist sends me.
Okay, so...
I don't really like the places I've been, so I'd like to go somewhere else.
What about some of the places the lyrics send you? Because you think about it, I mean, there is a common theme in some of the awful crap that you like. Is the down-and-out song...
That's not true.
That is a common theme. Down-and-out, the struggle... The heartache, the bad women, cheap booze.
That's not the part I was saying was not true. The part where you say it's awful crap is not true.
Yeah.
I mean, I was listening to Tom Waits the other day, whom I think you kind of like.
I love Tom Waits, but then again, he writes music to go with words. There's music happening.
There's notes
and things. And it just happens to be that he compliments them with words.
Well, Waits himself, if he were here, he would blow smoke on your face and spill whiskey on you and say, it's all about the lyrics.
No, it's not. If he did that, if he was all about the lyrics, he would be solo douchebag with acoustic guitar.
No, because...
He'd save himself so much time, so much effort... If it was just about the words, you could just learn your 2.5 chords and just strum some shit and say words over it.
Waits himself has said he just finds ways to get his lyrics out there. He said to once, he is in the lyrics delivery business just the way Philip Morris is in the nicotine delivery business. If I can quote.
But he wraps it into a nice flavor country package.
Sometimes.
You visit Flavor Country.
It's like he found... I got nothing here.
Yeah, you got nothing. So let's talk about some of those places, some of those ideas, some of those maybe worldviews and philosophies that you get from lyrics. And in particular, yes, songs you might like, but if you actually physically were in that neighborhood, if you will, in that metaphysical neighborhood, you wouldn't want to be there, or you'd be worried that, like,
your car would get stolen. Oh, that's a great question. My favorite Bruce Springsteen song is Incident on 57th Street, which relates to New York City. Mm-hmm. And once I was on 57th Street in New York City, and I was scared to freaking death. I was walking out of a bar, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And my friend had met someone and left me there. Mm-hmm. So I was all alone in New York City. I don't know how old I was, but I was younger than I am now. It was amazing. And I thought, okay, Springsteen wrote a song about this. It's okay. And that's what saved me.
Oh, Lord.
No, it was fine. I walked a couple blocks down 57th Street, and I was all right. But I probably should have died, because there were people that wanted to kill me there.
Yeah.
But I just kept walking. This is stupid. And this is so.
This is the first stupid thing in the podcast, by the way, people. This is the first one. Thanks for announcing that. Oh, this
and it is.
Sleeping upstairs.
Everything I've said made sense up till now.
Okay.
One time I was in New York City and I was lost. I was looking for Canal Street.
Okay.
And if you look at my high school yearbook from 19 whatever year that was, no one knows my age. It's a secret.
Okay.
My favorite song is Big Man on Mulberry Street by Billy Joel.
Okay.
And it has this, as the lyric goes, I cruise from Houston to Canal Street, a misfit and a rebel. Okay, I'm lost, and I have to find Canal Street, and it's rush hour in Manhattan, and I'm really scared. I'm a freaking redneck from Rural Valley, didn't know where I was.
Which, by the way, that's the thing, is you don't even have to say. You say you're from Rural Valley. There's no way, you know, that you had an urbanite childhood. The name of the place is the adjective for the place as well.
It kind of just sums it all up.
It's not like Clarksburg or anything like that. No, yeah. Rural Valley is a...
It was rural, and it was a valley.
Yeah.
I never saw an African-American, a Jewish person, until I was 17. But so there I am, a redneck cruising through Manhattan, and I'm loving it, but I'm scared. And I have to find Canal Street. And oh my God, what do I come upon but Houston? And all of a sudden, in my brain, it clicks. I cruise from Houston to Canal Street. I'm like, okay, it's Houston. I have a 50-50 chance of getting where I need to go. And I said, I'm going to use the force. And the so I just turned right on Houston. And sure enough, 7-8 blocks later, there's Canal Street. I'm like, thank you, Billy Joel. Thank you. And then I got to the place I needed to be.
That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Which has nothing to do with our topic. But
well, no, it does. Because I think, again, Houston too. You know, that
what was my favorite song? It was listed in the yearbook as my favorite song, Big Man on Mulberry Street.
There you go.
Which is also a song about a drunk guy staggering around Greenfield to go do a podcast at, what the hell is time? Is it 1 a.m.?
It's around 1 a.m., yes.
I think I might have stretched that metaphor a bit.
Yeah, but...
not the first time in my life. No, anyhow, go ahead, Matt. What else are your questions?
Well, you know, I could say, looking back in my own life, when I was a lyrics person... I will say it was
you
music.
Miss it, don't you? You miss it.
I don't.
You want to talk about lyrics. You're smart and you're an English guy.
I'd rather listen to Mogwai right now. Let's listen to Mogwai.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, you wouldn't. But anyway, because they're awesome. Anyway, so.
Your stuff tends to sound really good and be lyrically unfulfilling, which I love when you play stuff for me, because it works if you're too drunk to think about lyrics.
See, I just learned to be sober enough to think about music. Anyway, But I will say, when I was a lyrics person about 15 years ago, I say it was heavy in the lyrics, that'd be lyrics, man. I will say that was one of the first cases as a New Jerseyite high school kid where I was introduced to ideas bigger than my own head.
Oh, now yep. You're talking about, that's what music did for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in a place that was, you know.
It was a rural valley.
To quote Tim Berry, it was a one horse town. It was terrible. I mean, it was
insular.
It was small. You know, I never had a bagel till I was 20 years old.
Wow, that's horrifying.
I mean, when I was 17, I'm lucky enough that I graduated from high school early, and I went to college at 17. I'd never seen a black person. I'd never seen an openly gay person. I'd never met a Jewish person, which I never had a... I went to Duquesne. There weren't a lot of Jewish people there.
Yeah.
So I never had a conversation with a Jewish person until I was 20. And when I was... see, I'm not going to go music here, though. When I was 13 and 14, I would listen to Billy Joel. You know, you don't like him.
Yeah.
But I thought I was in New York City. I would listen to Bruce Springsteen. I would listen to the Rolling Stones and think I was in England. I mean, that's what music did for me.
Yeah.
And God help me. I would listen to bad music. What was...
Well, you still do. We established that.
What was the who were the people from Australia in the
Men at Work?
My God, I thought I was having a Mennonite sandwich and
Vegemite.
Vegemite. I never really.
I've had a Vegemite sandwich actually.
Of course you would have.
Yeah, of course Lisa B. Episode 6 or 7.
Had I hung out with Lisa more,
you would have had a Vegemite sandwich.
Lisa's great about the food. But yeah. I felt like I was in Australia. And like even like when I listened to Leonard Cohen, you know,
Yeah, you were in Canada.
Really
you were depressed and in Toronto.
Well, I've always been depressed, but I was cold when I listened to Leonard Cohen. And when I listened to, oh my God, who's the gay guy I'm thinking of?
Liberace?
Yeah. I love the
Elton
fact.
Elton John?
Yes. When I would listen to Elton John, I would understand alternative lifestyles. And by the way, these people weren't flag bearers for that. It was just what they were talking about. And now, when I learned Elton John didn't write his own lyrics, I was depressed for like a week. I'm not even kidding. Oh, man. Yeah, it was devastating to me.
Oh, you know, okay, this explains a lot for me, because I don't know if you've ever seen that scene in All the Right Moves.
Of course.
Which, of course, for my mom's from Johnstown, I still have family in Johnstown, so it is sort of one of those metatextual, cultural moments, the Right Moves.
And sadly, when I think of the movie All the Right Moves...
You think of Tom Cruise's penis, don't you?
When she grabs his penis when they're making out.
Yeah.
It's what I think of.
Yeah, you.
God help me.
Okay, what I think.
Sorry, Mom.
That's okay. What I think about in that movie is there's a scene where he and was it Leah Thompson, the woman who played his girlfriend, who then later grabbed his penis in the movie, are walking down this alley in Johnstown, and they pass this garage, and someone spray painted Elton John on the garage, and I thought to myself, who would be so inspired by Elton freaking John that they would go vandalize something?
Oh.
Like, how could that music possibly inspire that reaction in somebody? Like, I'm going to go out and commit a misdemeanor because I feel so passionately about what this is. Like,
you know,
really?
We've been friends for a long time, but this is a new shared experience. You know, I remember when someone said to me, Freddie Mercury's gay. I'm like, no, the band's name's Queen.
Oh.
Oh. I was like 30 years old when I heard that.
30?
I'm like, oh, I thought he...
That was still a long time ago, but...
Oh, it was like yesterday.
Yeah.
If you want to date me. Yeah, I had no idea Elton John was gay. Liberace, you mentioned Liberace before. I remember my grandmother, because I used to stay at my grandmother's most weekends. My nonna. because she was born in Italy. My quick story about my nonna. She used to tell me the story all the time about her voyage from Italy to America. At her funeral, I found out she was 9 months old then. God bless my nonna. I miss her every day. When I found out Freddie Mercury was gay, the band's name Queen. How did I miss that?
How did you miss that?
I was like,
was your stigmatism acting up then, too? Or, I mean...
That was an important moment for me to realize, oh, I don't really care if someone's gay.
Yeah. Well,
you They know, can do Another One Bites the Dust, which you might not like that song, but I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, sorry, Zach, never say the F word.
Yeah. Yeah, fucking don't. Anyway.
Matt just made beer come out my nose, just so you know.
Well, then I can get my story in here. Because I will sell the moment for me. I had a very similar experience, and it was when Bob Mould was outed. Bob Mould of Husker Du, Sugar.
Sure.
It was during the latter days of Sugar that The Advocate
So what year
outed,
is this?
93, 94. So I was still
That's about when Bruce did the interview in The Advocate, and I was like, Bob Mould's gay, Elton John's gay, and Bruce thinks it's okay to be gay? Yeah. That was great for me.
Yeah. Well, for me, is I thought I was okay with the gay thing. Because where I went to high school, I mean, I went to high school with people who were out. And it wasn't that
You are big of a, much younger than I am.
And,
because
and
that
more
was
cosmopolitan, too. I mean, it was just the high school I went to, you know, where, you know, you think when I graduated from high school, I mean, it was probably, I mean, we had Vietnamese kids who didn't speak a word of English. I mean, it was probably at least like 40%,
I think I probably should have dated some of those
minority,
girls.
You know. And so I thought I was okay with it, and I really identified with Bob Mould's music really strongly. And especially like not his love songs, but his breakup songs are amazing, and his songs about heartbreak and loneliness. And when I realized...
Sounds that, like I need to listen to that.
Yes, you do. Black Sheets of Rain, man, that's the breakup album.
Wait, is that on the... I'm sorry, no one knows this, but is that on the CD you burned me?
There might be a song or two from Black Sheets of Rain, but Black Sheets of Rain as a concept, as an album,
right on.
Is about heartache, loneliness. It's called, after all, Black Sheets of Rain. All of those songs, I realized that the songs that he wrote then, that was about, like, a dude. And, like, I thought it was a gut check. I thought I was okay, and then I realized, I still have things that I got to work on.
Well, that's like when it makes it more immediate.
100%.
When it makes it more immediate.
Yes.
You know, like my friends and family were all right with interracial dating until I dated a black girl. And then they were like, oh,
this is real.
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Yeah.
You know, that's funny you say that.
Yeah.
Something is more immediate.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, speaking of immediate, and we're already almost running long on time here. Can I ask the question that the podcast is actually about?
Go on.
People whose music you like, whose lyrics are good, or you identify with or whatever, who in real life you would never take advice from them.
Matt, that's a different podcast. We're going to have to get on to that other time.
No, well, I already...
How much time do I have?
It's already got a title, it's already got a description. Hit me, right now. Who do you like that you'd be like, yeah, no. like, if when
well,
it came to, like...
The biggest one is Jim Morrison.
Okay, yeah, you would never want life advice from Jim Morrison.
Dylan.
Really? Dylan even?
Dylan keeps getting divorced. He's a 75-year-old man who lives alone.
Okay.
And is bitchy and misses his exes. And writes terribly wonderful songs about them.
Okay.
Dylan is the big guy that I think of. And by the way, we should at some point do a whole podcast about that, like we should have tonight.
What, Dylan or...
No. Ooh, that's a... We could do 20 podcasts about him. About
have to do all the talking.
About artists who we don't... The actual topic of tonight. We've gone off on some wonderful tangents.
Yes, we have.
But we'll sometimes should probably do that topic that we set out to do tonight. But seriously, Bob Dylan, the greatest lyricist ever, whom you are not a fan of.
I'm lukewarm with Bob Dylan. Actually, it's pretty funny because you think the last podcast, actually episode 12 that I posted like 2 months ago, the one of the questions that I will ask you later, the answer was Bob Dylan. Well, okay. Well, no, I can't tell you the question, but it was...
The answer's always Bob Dylan or the Beatles.
Okay. Well, it was not a positive reference, and it was someone who's a songwriter.
Go on.
It was said the thing. But I'll get to that later in about 10 minutes.
Okay, we're going to have to do another podcast. Because I think we're out of time.
We're getting up there. We're getting there. Well, do you want to skip to the bottom five then? Are we done chatting about music?
The bottom five?
The bottom five. The bottom five is five questions that are not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical
nature.
Well,
we never got to our fucking main topic, so let's do the bottom five and save the main topic for another day.
Okay, there'll be a sequel.
Actually,
you know what? It's not a sequel. This podcast is then a prequel for our topic.
Ooh.
This is the prequel podcast.
Usually the prequel comes after the movie, but the prequel this time comes
actually
before.
Truly.
Where it belongs.
Where it belongs, we're not cashing in. We're legit.
Seriously, Matt, as long as you have liquor and cigars, I'm okay to keep coming back.
Yes, and I've had fun. This has been fun. This has been good. So you're ready for the bottom five?
Yes!
This could take forever as well, so...
How much time do we have?
I don't care, as long as the file...
It's 105.
It's 105.
I have to teach in 13 hours.
Yes.
We should be alright.
Yes, you should
be
fine.
Do you have any more beer? I'm just kidding.
I got some of this.
I meant my beer, but thank you for pointing to your beer.
Yes. Well, I got more bottles of that.
Go on, let's do it.
Question number one. If reincarnation is real, okay, let's say the Hindus got it right.
Okay.
If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be? What would you choose to be as...
I would be HIV, and I would infect no one. I would purposely jump right before it happened. Because I think it's the most terrible disease ever.
Okay, so you would...
I'd be a disease and I'd purposely never infect anyone.
Ah, so you would, like, from the inside, like, secret...
I would just jump. And when I was ready to infect someone, I would jump somewhere else. I would jump to some racist redneck.
Okay. Okay, so you would be, in a way, the vengeance. Okay.
Is that a good answer? I think I like that.
It's an answer anyway.
All right, next question.
All right, next question. This is a little more philosophical.
Mm.
All right.
Plato,
no. Wrong.
Plato's always right, but go
Plato's always wrong. He ruined everything for everyone. But
greatest
anyway.
Thing ever, but go on.
What is the limit to experience or personal limitation that most people impose upon themselves? In your humble opinion, what is the limit to experience or personal limitation that most people sort of impose upon themselves?
Ooh.
They don't have to. They could do
right.
other things and be freer. But
most
not.
People go to the point where they're 25% uncomfortable and stop.
Mm.
And they should keep going.
Yes.
Most people's... That's funny. I just said this to my children the other day. I said, most people don't do it right. And you have a choice. You can do it right, or you can do it wrong.
Those are two oppositional choices. Yes.
Yeah. And most people do it wrong because they stop when they're 25% close to being right.
Yeah. All right. All right. Question three. Actually, we are zipping through these, but I think number five might take a little while.
Okay.
Question three, which is the bad porno plot question.
Hmm. Okay, all say porno you had, is good, so that's inherently...
Well, the plot. So, say you had access to a time machine.
All right. I know the answer to this question.
Name a historical figure you wish you could have had sex with.
Oh, I was going to say Frank Sinatra, but that question is... That is not the answer now.
You sure?
It's definitely Ava Gardner.
Ava Gardner?
Oh, my God. Ooh, maybe Lauren Bacall, but I'd still have sex with her now, even though she's 84. I'll take her off the mix.
Ava Gardner.
Oh, my God. Her in that, the Hemingway movie they did. Sun Also Rises, I believe.
Yes, yes.
Wow. I remember when I was like 13, 14, watching that movie going, wow, I'm sure I'm straight. because she looked amazing in that movie. But Lauren Bacall into Have and Have Not, wow. Lauren Bacall in the movie she did in the 60s. I'm drawing a blank. Do I have to pick just one?
Yes.
Like every woman from the 50s, because they were so much cooler then. If I had to fit one historical figure.
Well, didn't you just pick Lauren Bacall?
No, I'm thinking, I'm going to pick Ava Gardner.
Okay, you are picking Ava Gardner.
Yeah, because I'd have sex with Lauren Bacall right now.
Okay, Ava Gardner it is.
She wouldn't even have to. I'd actually pick up the tab, don't tell anyone.
Oh.
For a date with Lauren Bacall, because she's still alive.
Yeah.
No, Ava Gardner, right after she dumped Sinatra, which, by the way, was a terrible mistake on her part.
Yeah.
Lauren Bacall was gorgeous, and she had that look. That she would look at you, and you would just feel you were the most handsome man in the world, and you'd be sitting in a freaking movie theater. Like, Zach and I watched Mogambo the other day. Not the best movie, but not a terrible movie. When she would look through me at my 46-inch screen, I would be like, I'm the handsomest man in the world. Oh, wait, she died like 30 years ago. I mean, what? Who has that? That's amazing. So it's Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall.
No.
Ava Gardner.
Ava Gardner. I like Lauren Bacall, too.
It's late and...
No, I like him
more beer than I am. So Ava Gardner. We're going to Ava Gardner. Okay, so next question.
If you have Lauren Bacall's phone number, I'll take it.
Okay, I don't. It's not my old phone. I dropped it in the toilet and lost all my contacts. And you know.
That's the second time Matt made beer come out of my nose.
Okay, so the next, on the last podcast, the answer to this question was Bob Dylan.
I don't think I heard that one because
blew it off, yeah. So here's the question.
Go on.
So you're going to get two layers. You're going to think of the question and you think, oh my God, this person picked Bob Dylan for
the question. And I'm going to have to beat that person up, I think.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, it's not the first fight I've been in this week. Go on.
Okay. Of the living villains of history.
Okay, Bob Dylan is not a living...
Wait. Whose obituary would you like to write?
Oh.
This is the Christopher Hitchens question. He said that in obituary.
God, I miss mortality. Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah, in mortality, he said, you know, when he found out that he had the fatal diagnosis, one of the first things, he was like, damn it, I was looking forward to reading those obituaries. Wait, I was looking forward to writing those obituaries. So, of the living villains of history right now, whose obituary would you most like to write? And that could be a vengeance thing, that could be an interest thing, a pity thing, trying to figure out how a human being got that dysfunctional.
Oh, God, there's so many people.
Bad. Yeah, but
I've got like 40 people that just entered my mind, and I'm not smart enough to process all of them. I mean, I really hate both of my ex-father-in-laws, and I can't wait till they die. But that's not who I'm thinking of.
Oh,
it'll be a good thing for the world.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney.
That's... I mean, wow. I'm still torn between my father-in-laws.
Dick Cheney killed more people, I'm guessing.
But he didn't ruin my life. So.
Well, you know, the Iraq War debt, you know, rest of your working life, you'll have no retirement. That's pretty bad, too.
Who ruined education? Was that Richard Nixon?
I'll go with the Bill Redding's that it was Reagan.
He's already dead.
He's already dead. So is Nixon, actually. I know you didn't know he was sick, but...
I like a lot of the stuff Nixon did.
Yeah.
Really do.
EPA, Nixon, affirmative action?
Nixon would be a Democrat... By the way, it's a totally different... Nixon would be a Democrat now.
Nixon would be a Democrat, yet all of the stuff that Nixon had done... would be legal now. So maybe, actually, Obama is Nixon reincarnated.
Well, I like Obama, but God, he's made a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
He never broke the law. But what you're saying
but is... But now what he did, a lot of the stuff with like wiretapping and whatever, actually be totally legal now. So, anyway,
back to the question.
Back to the question.
Seriously, table that. Future podcast. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, you just blew my mind, and my mind is too small to recover.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick...
I mean, right? I mean, he got busted for snooping.
Which is legal now.
Which is legal now. And also, you think that extra layer of secrecy, right? He erased 18 minutes of tape,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, there is a total lack of transparency in government now anyway. So it's all classified, and you can't know. So you think all of that... We've just shifted. The behavior has stayed the same. Our expectations as a populace has shifted. But anyway...
What's funny you say that. Someone told me the other day that Obama would be a Republican 30 years ago.
Yeah, he would.
And Nixon would be a Democrat.
Well, and you think about it, too. You see, David Cameron's conservative, but yet the British papers consider Obama...
Who's David Cameron? I'm sorry.
The Prime Minister of England.
Of course I knew that.
Yes.
Just making sure you knew.
You know, consider him, or I've read in things like The Independent and even sort of more right-wing papers in England, that, you know, they consider that, you know, Obama's the more conservative politician.
Oh!
Yes.
Listen, anyway. I'm an Obama supporter, and it's like, did he drink Ronald Reagan's blood, for Christ's sake? He is so conservative, it's pissing me off.
Yeah.
Obamacare is something freaking the guy with the bad hand. Bob Dole wrote.
Actually, it was the Heritage Foundation.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, actually, Bob Dole's was more closer to a single-payer system than... More leftist.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Oh, dear Lord.
Anyway, of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you like to write?
I'm going to go with...
No one can tell, by the way, you have ADHD.
It's a beautiful malady. Read the book. It's great.
Yes, anyway.
I'm going to go with... My first father-in-law, that's who I really, he's a villain of history. No, I'm going to go with Dick Cheney. God's sake, had that guy been a good counsel to George Bush, listen, I think I kind of, George Bush is sort of a dupe of history. He was really, and I think maybe Obama is the same thing. Mm-hmm. They were led astray by bad advisors. I really think had... who could have George Bush? Had George Bush picked John McCain as a vice president,
mm-hmm.
as a counsel, we probably wouldn't have gone into Iraq. Think how much better...
He was Mr. Bomb, 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 okay. Bomb, Iran, Bomb. So that's McCain. So
but it's different to bomb someone than to have foots on the ground. Feet on the ground. Foots. I just used the word foots.
Foots.
And no... Seriously, I have to think Dick Cheney, because okay. that guy wrote the freaking... He wrote the Iraq War in, like, what, 1995?
Mm-hmm, something like that.
Wolfowitz, by the way, a guy with a philosophy degree, but yes. I...
Well, you know what Karl Popper always said was, you know, the worst... you think about it, all the bad isms of the 20th century were conceived of by intellectuals of the highest order, philosophers of the highest order, so hey...
All but right. I'm going to go with Dick Cheney with a close second to one of my father-in-laws to be named later.
Okay. Yes. As soon as they clear the roster spot.
They're both terrible.
All right. Question five. We're almost out of the woods, but I think this is a story.
Oh, we're in the woods, buddy.
We're in the woods.
Okay. You asked to interview me, so that
you
see
and
what
I'm
you're getting.
Fun. Okay. So, I know the answer to the first question. The second part is the money one.
Go on.
Have you ever been close to death?
Well, yes.
What did you learn?
When I was... I had just turned 18. For those of you that don't know, I was drinking heavily. Do I have time to tell this whole story?
Yeah. Right. Long time, yeah.
So, there was a girl that I liked... And her boyfriend challenged me to a drink-off. Now, those of you who've ever met me know there are three things I can do. I can talk about music.
Well, lyrics.
I can talk about all music, even if I don't like it.
Lyrics.
And I can I can drink. So
wait, there was three things. So you listed two.
Well, I was drunk. I was seeing double.
Okay.
So... No, I'm kidding. What is the third thing I could do?
Oh, Lord.
So, Ben Williams, I will send this to him on Facebook, of course. We drank and drank and drank. And he ended up passing out and throwing up. And I was we each had a case of beer. We went beer for beer, and I said, wow, I probably shouldn't drive. So I passed my keys to Scott, and Scott wrecked my dad's car, and I went through the windshield. Because it was 1987, I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, because that was something pussies did.
Yes.
In retrospect, I wish I was a pussy.
Yes.
But I almost died. I was 5 millimeters from death. And
oh, explain that. 5 millimeters from death, how?
Oh, I went through the windshield.
And what was the 5 millimeters, though?
I was that close to my carotid artery.
Okay.
Yeah, I was scarred. I have a wonderful scar now. And, Jesus, can I tell this story? At the time, I was waiting till I got married to have sex. And okay. I was a 4.0 student at Duquesne. And I went to bed early, and I just changed all that.
So you learned sort of a carpe diem thing then.
Well, actually, right after that, I saw that movie. What's the carpe diem movie? Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society.
I decided to become an English teacher, and I decided not to.
That's like watching Platoon and wanting to go in the army. Oh no, Full Metal Jacket and wanting to go in the army.
Okay. Don't ruin my moment.
Okay, sorry.
How many times have you almost died? So be quiet. But you know I love you.
Twice.
I don't even know how to respond to that. Well, at some point, we'll hear how Matt almost died twice on his own freaking podcast.
Yes,
but. But, oh, here's the greatest part. I didn't know Scott was driving. So for 5 years, I carried around the guilt that I thought I was driving.
And the DUI on your record.
Thank you. But if you're thinking to hire me, that was expunged. It's gone. Yeah, I had a DUI. And, but it really changed the way I looked at life. And ever since then, it was September 24th, 1980, whatever year. If you're trying to date me, it was 1990. But whatever. Or 1998. But it was a long freaking time ago. And ever since then, I've lived my life like I'm going to die tomorrow. It was the best day of my life.
It was your alive day.
It was the best freaking day ever. And I almost died. I remember, I was in the hospital. My dad was on a payphone. That'll tell you how long ago it was. And someone ran out of my hospital room going, "This kid's going to die any minute. Get in here. Get in here. Save him." My dad was on the payphone right outside. I mean, I was ready to die.
Mm.
But I didn't. And I'm so glad. That was the best day of my life. Because after that, I learned how to live. Because you got to live like you're dying. And I know that's a stupid country song.
Yes.
But I had that philosophy way before him. And I've always lived like I was going to die. I mean, I always think I'm going to die tomorrow. So, you know, if I'm sleepy or if I'm like, oh, whatever, I don't want to do this, I do it. Because God knows I might die tomorrow.
Yeah.
I always felt like I was living on borrowed time. Maybe a good place to end this.
Yeah, no, that is a great place to end this. So yeah, let's say that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. Let's see, our homepage where you can find new episodes, old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at gonnadiepodcast. And We're All Gonna Die has pages on Facebook and the Google+. Thanks to Brett Zork, as always, for the lovely theme music.
Love
later
it.
Meets.